And this one, if this is T, it has to be A. Where A and T go together. M, C, and G go together. So there is, once you have one side determined, the other is free to choose. In other words, it cannot be anything else other than what will fit into the puzzle network you follow. In other words, once you have this determined, or the determined, then the other is necessarily determined. So really, the order on one strand will determine the order on the other strand, and therefore, the order on one strand is the important thing, and this is the information. Okay. So we have this type of structure, and it goes on all the way down. There will be bases here and such. They, what holds them together? Actually, there is a bond that holds the two together. We call it a hydrogen bond. It's a weak bond with easily ruptured. Incidentally, ultraviolet light is much too strong for the structure to be able to rupture. This is too strong, but just a high amount of energy will cause the DNA to split. In other words, the hydrogen bond to rupture. Alright, now let's see if this particular model for unit can explain reproduction. It can in the following manner. When the cell is about to reproduce, the following thing happens. Acts sort of like a zipper. The two strands fall apart. We look at a diagram like this. See what I mean? They pull apart because they're unwound. They, you know, it's a thread. Two strands are stretching on yourself. Women who do any embroidery, you know, you can pull it apart. Well, this is what happens. So it's unwound. And the two strands are pulled apart and separate. This is now the reproduction is going to take place. Then the next thing that happens are certain enzymes present in the particular medium which this occurs, and each one of these strands begins to produce another strand that will go with. In other words, each strand, we use the term synthesize, build up, produce. Each strand synthesizes another strand. And what about this other strand? Probably the order of A, T, C, C. What would the other strands have to be high? The only thing that would fit with A would be T, wouldn't it? The only thing that would fit with T would be A, C, G, and so on. In other words, suppose, why don't I just take this strand and put A, T, C, C here. All right, my opposite strand then would have to be T, A, G, G, because nothing else would fit in. It produces its own complement because they fit together, mirror image. So I started with this thing, and you see, my new strand is identical to this one. Let's see what happens to the other side. I have T-A-G-G over here. T-A-G-G. Now the one that this produces, here is a, this has to have an adenine, opposite, thymine, C-C, and by golly, they're both identical. So what has happened, from one strand, from one original, we are building up two. This is how reproduction can be explained on the basis of DNA. So what happens? It splits like a zipper, and each of the strands will build up a new strand that is its complement. So we end up with two, whereas we started with one. So we have the ample three. Okay, so DNA then can explain how reproduction takes place. It splits open and each fills a new strand. Now, how can DNA explain the characteristics. There was somewhere on this, there must be a way in which we can build up characteristics or insights. We find that most, all functions in the body are controlled by molecules that we call enzymes. All enzymes are proteins. We've all heard of proteins, eggs, and such, and meat, certain things are proteins. But enzymes are proteins. So, incidentally, all proteins are not enzymes. What is enzyme? Any of you are familiar with chemistry, you may have heard of the term catalyst. An enzyme makes a reaction occur. Makes a reaction that would normally occur, but occur at all times. For example, you perhaps are aware of the fact that we give enzymes to digest our food. And then we put enzymes, break down food into small particles that we fill and absorb. All right. Without these enzymes, perhaps the food might still be digested, but maybe at a temperature of 200 degrees centigrade, well, the blood and you would be sort of smoky if you were going to digest our food. But the enzymes make it possible for these reactions to occur at body temperature and at a rapid rate. Otherwise, it might be so slow that you might have to wait, 20 days to digest a little bit of food. So enzymes are extremely important. We call them catalysts. They speed up reactions or make them occur that they would not normally be so at the temperature. Okay, so this is the function of the enzyme. And if we analyze the human body as much, we find that enzymes are necessary for all the metabolic processes. Enzymes are necessary for the production of eye pigmentation, hair pigmentation, and so on. So actually, enzymes are behind particular characteristics. All different enzymes, thousands of them. And even just production of one simple substance on the downer, which is the pigment, meaning the non-pigment, and is involved in about 12 to 14 pathways. So all these number of enzymes are necessary to produce this one little pigment. So if you have a mistake that you don't, that you miss out on one of these enzymes, your pigment must find your path, and albino. Yes, perhaps you know that albino is perfectly white, no pigmentation, pink eyes, and So, missing an enzyme and the methods of the albumin. So, you see, there's an enzyme behind all of this. So, what we want to do is to see how DNA can explain the production of enzymes. So, why don't we take now DNA? Maybe first, because RNA is the one that actually does the work in producing the enzymes, why don't I quickly mention what RNA is. RNA think of as a single strand. In other words, here we only have one strand, therefore one message. You think of it from a printing press, it prints out its information. So RNA is one strand, and it has the same basis with the exception of one. Adenine does not have findings of uracil instead, but otherwise cytosine and guanine. So it has four bases, same kind of structure. The sugar is ribose instead of DNA. Otherwise, it's pretty much like DNA. One strand instead of two. One of the bases is different, and the sugar is different. So we can recognize, we can distinguish RNA from DNA. What about RNA? Where does it get its order of bases from? It gets it directly from DNA. In other words, RNA is first present produced in the nucleus from DNA. In other words, DNA, like a printing press, stamps out RNA, and the RNA goes to the outer portion of the cell here, then the RNA does all the work. What does RNA have to do?
Closing now, we make a possible listing of these bases here, and we're going to find that these bases are the important thing as far as determining the particular method. Closing now, we have A, U, G, A, U, G, A, U, G. This is sort of loaded. You have a distribution of these bases that building sort of non-specific into it. All right. Think of this as a book. You know, you've all read a book. What are books made out of? You call paragraphs, sentences, and what makes up sentences, words, or what makes up words, is the letters. All right. These could be considered as letters, sentences, words, and sentences, and so how can this be? Well, to explain it, let's now talk a little bit more about what a protein is. The protein is a very complex molecule. It's made up of smaller things that we call amino acids. There are amino acids stuck together make protein. And there are about 20 different amino acids. It could be 16 in certain proteins, it could be 4 amino acids, something like that. But anyway, there are 20 different amino acids that can be combined in some way or another into the particular protein. Alright. Now, the trick is we must somehow be able to, with these letters here, write out the information to make an amino acid. In other words, it's like a code. We're using them to work cryptographically. One code of a certain number of letters to spell out certain amino acids. Well, if we use a code of 2, in other words, A and U, we only have 16 possible combinations. It's necessary to code out amino acids. But the only problem now is that we have too many possibilities, and 64 possibilities, and they're all different amino acids. What about the others that are so-called extras? We'll explain that in a minute. Alright, this being the case, then here are 3 together. They spell out 1 amino acid. You can think of an amino acid as a word. These are letters. The amino acid is spell out 1 word. They're all 3 letters. 3 letters here. Okay. Instead of otherwise, and here's another amino acid. And here's another amino acid. Incidentally, it's A, G, A, G, A, G, it all goes to the amino acid. So, this is one word, meaning amino acid, which is another word, amino acid is another word. Then, how many of these words do we have to put together to make a sentence? Oh, there may be as many as 10,000, 3,000, or more amino acids in a particular protein. So, it would be then quite a few. Words at least in our sense, or better. Yeah, this would be worse than the German even, who write paragraph upon paragraph before you can get his verb at the end of the sentence. So in this case, you have a very long, long sentence. And what happens then these RNA, the bases on it, spell out all the information to make a protein. And a protein would be 1 G. Then on here would be another one. So you can see the DNA molecule must be pretty long and complex to take care of all the thousands of genes that would be sent on a single chromosome. So very, very complex. And then AUG then, you would assume, equals a particular amino acid. Alright, what it is we are now studying, what is the code? We want to know what is the combination of bases that give us a particular amino acid. Then we know this is the then you can reproduce anything you want and get the right combination together and you can produce any enzyme or any protein that you want. All you have to do is know the code to it, the cryptogram code. So this is how it works. Essentially then, the RNA has a message on it
it, there is a little usher and carrying amino acids to this place. They're linked on amino acids stuck together, protein. It's an alternative like AM. The whole mechanism works like a moving belt mechanism. You have a structure here that moves along the belt, and as it does, the amino acids are hooked on, and pretty soon you have a complete protein tossed off. And it's just like running along, reading the message, you know, read along here, the information, hook on the amino acids as you get the information. This is how it's done for an RNA synthesis. RNA is important. It is the control of the formation. Supposing now, this is a stick. Somebody maybe it had an extra x-ray that she didn't need or otherwise. Anyway, a little goof, and she lost one of those. Now, it's here. And we find that DNA tends to, and RNA is, tends to break it into something. Okay, so they just missed a little base in there. What's going to happen? Let's see. Here's ATG. We get the amino acid, no problem. But look at this now. We've got A. This is stuck together again. The reading mechanism doesn't know that we took the letter out. We don't know it. So we've got AGA now. So what AG? What's AGA do? Probably another amino acid, wouldn't it? Therefore, we're getting the wrong amino acid stuff in there. And then look at this. This next one goes A, let's see, GA, then U, GA, that's all. Goofed up too, isn't it? So as a matter of fact, everything all the way along the line is goofed up. What happens? No enzyme, no protein, no function, no person. In other words, I'm missing, it's like just a small mistake of losing one of these little bases. For me, if you miss an enzyme, you're missing one enzyme. Might mean that you have hemophilia, might mean that you have diabetes, or might even mean that you're not here. So you see, you get a pretty important. And how easy is too easy to get a stick? Now there's another possibility. Supposing now the mistake was different, maybe you got changed to A. In other words, same number of bases and everything, but we just made the mistake here. The chances are that it might still function because all the rest of these are okay, aren't they? And remember I said there were 64 combinations. That means that there are two or three different combinations that will give you the same amino acid. So it's a protective mechanism. So if you do have one alteration, this might still give you the right amino acid and, you know, you're in no trouble at all. So the real trouble comes if you lose part of your chromosome or gain an extra portion. Then you see, everything gets used up. And as far as the basis of thinking about alteration, sometimes just one letter can be repaired or doesn't matter because of this mechanism that there is more than one combination that will give you the same. So, what happens when there is a mistake? You use the term mutation. Mutation then, you could consider as a mistake or change in the DNA. A mutation is something that happens. It happens because of the environment, it happens spontaneously perhaps, but it is inherited. In other words, it will pass on to your children and to the other cell. In other words, it's something that is inherited. It is different from environmental acquired things like, you know, big muscles or otherwise. This is not inherited, but a mutation is. And how we can produce mutations by artificial means, like for example, X radiation will produce mutations. Ultraviolet rays, very effective means to produce mutations. Any stronger radiation, of course, an X-ray, certain chemicals will produce mutations. So they can be produced spontaneously. Artificially, should I say. Mutations also occur spontaneously. In other words, it's possible. There's a certain percentage of the population that have spontaneous mutations, when the link has spontaneous mutations, one of the genes turns into a, the gene to be the field. Then it turns into a mutation, and the state is no longer going to be using the right substance necessary for the blood clotting. This is a mutation, it does occur spontaneously. There are other mutations that will occur in the population at a particular ratio, they occur just, you know, don't use at all. What could be some contributing factors? Perhaps background radiation. By the way, I cannot, when the Russians are shooting off nuclear bombs and not very still, this background radiation is present in the air, you can't escape it. This could possibly be a contributor. At any rate, mutations do occur spontaneously too. Most are undesirable, but they could be desirable. An example of a desirable mutation, at least as far as bacteria is concerned, is undesirable to us, but desirable, and a protection mechanism for the bacteria, actually. Certain bacteria is that almost all bacteria will mutate at a particular rate. Supposing now you're giving this bacteria a substance that will normally kill it all. And well, give it a general name, it's an antibiotic. How many of you know for the antibiotic? You must have taken them one time or another, surely. And a good example might be penicillin. Or neomycin. Oh, a whole bunch of them. I'm sure you've heard it one more. Antibiotics, what is their function? Their function is to inhibit, prevent the growth of bacteria. In order to have a bacterial infection, you can antibiotic. Alright, what about the bacteria in this? The antibiotics are supposed to kill off the bacteria. But frequently, something happens in this mass. Millions and millions and millions of bacteria that you have in your own school infection. One or two of those cells mutate. And the mutation is such that it is no longer harmed by the antibiotic, it may be thrived on it. So what happens when one or two cells that mutated, the bacterial cells mutated and they became resistant to the antibiotic? That is then that one or two cells, they're resistant, and okay, you kill off the others, but these two, and you can, you know, you're not in trouble. This is why antibiotics are not sold on the open market. Because every time you can hear, you know, with a virus call, or who knows what, you take the antibiotic. But you need even a reason to be still a double amount of quantity. What would happen? This would mean that because everyone was taking these antibiotics, they would miss it, become absolutely useless, of less value than aspirin, because they wouldn't even feel pain. In other words, just the amount of sugar, as far as this is concerned, less value. They wouldn't harm the bacteria release, they might even help them to thrive. Why? Because all bacteria left would have to be resistant to the antibiotics, and there would be inevitably resistant bacteria to the antibiotics, which are those in the animal. So this is why antibiotics are not called immunosuppressants. They should only be given when, they should only be given when there is a bacterial infection. Antibiotics are no value for virus. They do not kill virus, they do not inhibit virus, they do nothing towards virus, and it would be harmful to take them because then it's like having them on the market getting this thing and promoting then resistance of bacteria to the antibiotics. So this is the problem, and this is why we're continuing looking for new antibiotics. We have to. No longer, no sooner is one disease and the bacteria become resistant to it and we need another one to combat. There's no other problem, particularly with bacterial infections of the intestinal tract, because here, you see, we have normally in our intestinal tract a bacteria we call E. coli, and it's there all the time. Everyone has it. It performs actually its health function. And this, if you know, and it doesn't down in the biotic, this bacteria can become super resistant to all the antibiotics. Well, with an allergy, you call it that really positive. But the problem is, supposing now, you go down to South America, And you drink some of their water on today, or somebody told you it's all right, and what do you get? Dysentery, cholera, and typhoid. Then you're in trouble, because your E. coli, which you've already have there, is already resistant to all these antibiotics. And it transmits, it's resistant to the typhoid bacteria and your pneumonia. But if you had not taken all these, your E. coli would not have been resistant, and it would have nothing to give off to the bacteria that cause the type of common disease. So very recently, it's been discovered that the resistance can be transferred from bacteria to bacteria, not necessarily the same species. Different genera, different species, it can be transferred, and it is rather rapidly to residue. So one of our problems is the mass feeding of animals with antibiotics, because you can see what's going to happen. The bacteria that we're going to come around are going to be resistant to all these antibiotics, and they will transmit this resistance to all other bacteria, and because it's going to be quick, it's more antibiotics. We do not allow the people to give to cows to feed so they grow a little better, because they want bacteria to feed. So this is one of the problems with mutation. This is one of the problems by trying to combat fungus diseases and other diseases in plant, crop, and animal disease. The resistance of these bacteria to whatever we give them. Insecticides, you've probably heard of this problem too. The insect becomes mutated, becomes resistant to the insecticide. What you have to do is stronger insecticide. And what is going to be the ultimate effect? You see, on the plant, on other animals, on you. You can't just keep getting stronger insecticide.
They have to know that.
Pardon?
Cooking doesn't kill us.
Cooking kill what?
Well, the bacteria.
Yeah, but you can't cook people
though. Well, you meant about where you intimated that if you ate with meat,
not necessarily, but you could see the animal could get it from respiration or otherwise. No, this is
somewhere in the crop, but it is a
Yeah. So, the point would be that we're getting strains of these bacteria in the air at all. We're getting strains of bacteria that are resistant to everything. They will transmit to all others because they're in the air and all over. And you can't escape that. And so they will transmit this resistance. Pardon?
It's almost like a atomic bomb.
So,
get to the point where you can see you have to build up the resistance to everything, not on the plate.
So, this is one of the problems, the factor mutation of the lower animals to whatever we decide to kill them off. So, in the modern methods of control for insects, so called biological control, where we're using their hormones, which hopefully they will become resistant to their own hormones. We're going to use chemicals they become resistant to. Surely they won't become resistant to their own hormones. We'll use these to adapt such that we'll never get any adults, or a variety of type of mechanisms such that we don't cut down the production of eggs to either sterilize males. Such, this would hopefully be a better method of approach as far as insect control is concerned. All right, so I mentioned a little bit about mutations, what can happen, and how it can be caused. Now, some other of you have been wondering about production of lice and test tubes and so on, and here we've got DNA, it's all of this that grew up the mechanical man, such. Let me first talk about some of the ideas of origin of life. There are three basic theories concerning origin of life. And let's see where how these fit into a possible idea. First, the idea of vitalism states that there is some supernatural force that all of a sudden created life. In other words, this would be a describe perhaps if you took it better or worse than what that man can touch in one day. In other words, that that all of a sudden life was created, it came here, instantaneous. Second on the mechanism states that no life, that we have natural laws, in other words, that we have God in here or not. In other words, that there are natural laws that are continually followed, and that life somehow developed following these natural laws, that it wasn't something that defied the laws that were initially presented. In other words, you're contradicting yourself in a way, because you do have natural laws, and God would be the nature of these laws, and why would we break them? You see, in other words, we follow the laws and the natural laws. However, the idea of mechanism states that the people that supported this belief felt that to get an organic molecule, you had to have life. And you see, instead of working around itself, only life can produce an organic molecule. The way you're working an organic molecule around life, so you have the same problem. And it's really not different, except that it's supposed to develop through natural law. So we still got a bridge to grasp. How is that when we jump from no life to life with this big molecule of life that has been developed? So the problem is really much different. Materialism now works on the same idea that it is natural laws that develop, that life develops out of natural laws and natural process. But with one exception, it states that organic molecules do not necessarily have to come from life. You can get still up organic molecules from inorganic. In other words, from a smell, you start with inorganic things, like water, ammonia, this type of thing, put them together, and gradually build up organic molecules, and then gradually from here is built up or developed in a very beautifully organized way. So this is the idea of materialism, a series of steps leading to complexity, building up, you see, ultimately to life. The actually, probably the first real presentation of this idea comes from a Russian female pair in 1924. Maybe his first of his first book on the origin of life. 1936, he presented a more complete version of it. The time that he read it, well, the time it was written, pretty much born, I would say, by most scientists, and otherwise, it was completely on a theoretical basis. No evidence behind it whatsoever, but presently, we're finding that more and more of his statements have, with science, we're able to prove the need for the actual spiritual in light of what he suggested. But now, before we actually talk about the idea of origin of life, first we have to describe what is life. And this is not an easy thing. You know, you're alive and you know the difference between what is and not. But it is not as easy. Simply, if you want to go to Mars and find out if there's life on Mars. Surely you don't believe that people are going to fly on Mars, you also know that it's not that. Probably no people at all, very primitive form of life, but what is life and what isn't life? What are we going to look for? What is necessary? So the old idea of life was it had to be like us. In other words, we're made up of cells, therefore life must be made up of cells. You don't have cells in life. And this has been the basic idea of what life is. Life must cell, must be able to reproduce, must have a metabolism, and, you know, what we have. However, now the idea of what is living is changing, and some other ideas are being presented. Some people feel that life is nothing more than the ability to carry on chemical reactions such that you break down things, build them up, but use up the energy that you are, in other words, you get energy when you break down certain particles like food or whatever. You get energy from this, and this energy is put into the system for a growth process. In other words, it's more of a get down to basically the chemistry that life is something that has this interaction of breaking down the building up, but in which the building up is the major project, in other words, that it is not the breakdown feature, that you have it free energy and it be utilized in the ordinance. Another kind of definition says that one can duplicate itself by DNA and has the possibility of mutating of DNA. Then it is fine. And if this is a acceptable definition, then the gene, or just the segment of DNA, could be controllable. This is where perhaps some virus enters in. You've all heard of virus diseases. A virus is a very simple form of thing that has a non-living. This depends on our definition of life. It has no cell, has no nucleus, has no metabolism as such, but it does have DNA, you see. So if we take the simple definition of life as meaning DNA, the ability to reproduce, then virus can live it. We take the traditional concept of life and test for the cell, virus is non-living. So it's ridiculous to argue that virus is living or non-living. You first have to agree on what is life. People really agree on this. A virus has DNA in it, and the mode of infection of virus would be to inject into another cell and then the DNA reproduces. So the virus is in the way, you could consider it a kind of parasite as such, doesn't have infinity, which it must have other than itself for it to survive. So although a virus can be considered a good form of life, maybe it is because it has to have other life before it can survive. All right, so we've talked about what is what. Now, some of the ideas concerning the origin of what. You may have heard of the idea of spontaneous generation. This was stated by Aristotle and continued on up into the 1620s and 1800s, as a matter of fact. This idea was that, as Aristotle said, worms, insects, fish, frogs, mice, all these could appear spontaneously, boom, provided you had the right breeding ground. And you need a till and some moist soil, all you need is some breeding of those things. Well, it's a piece of everything. Talk about a piece of meat and let it sit, you know, nice and moist soil. Let it sit there for a while, you know, 2 or 3 days, outside of bright shiny sun. And what is that? Worms and little hoppers. They just came. They weren't on meat this morning. Check the meat over real carefully. Nothing on it, perfectly pure. Give it a toss, out on the ground, and suddenly you've got all these things that weren't here before. Finally, meat generation is just a rose right out there. When it came right out of the meat, you see it's been filthy, and let it know it's all you need something new to learn. How you're going to keep it, not how you do it. And it wasn't done actually until 1864, finally. So this was still believed then up in the 1600s, 1700s. The alchemists even believed that they can also at the same time involved with the idea that sperm of a man. In other words, for people to be reproduced, everything is in sperm. The whole new man is in sperm. So all important is the particular sperm that happens to develop in the female. All the functions of the female is in the house, in the nice and warm, and so on, for the sperm to develop. But the organism here is the whole human is within the sperm. The alchemists actually believe that they could brew one of these things up in the testes if they got the integration. They could just brew them up in the testes. Well, the argument started with Salamani in the late 1700s. He tried to prove that there was no such thing as spontaneous generation. But what he did, he had a flask
if you boil the brew, or bouillon, whatever it was, then seal the top, and there was no light. Okay, but there is no such thing as spontaneous generation. Once I remove what was already there and seal it, no light. You can say, oh, your thing, what you've done, you boil it, you killed everything, and then you have removed the oxygen in the sealing process, and what can live without oxygen anyway? So, of course, you take off the top, and we'll guarantee you, you get more light. So, of course, obviously, that's the air. So, no one was convinced to respond to this argument. And so, spontaneous generation continues. Then, apparently, there was a surprise. The argument got so hot that the French government decided to offer cause to the one person who could prove either one way or the other. And we don't care what it is, as long as we prove it and keep quiet about it. We're tired of this argument and ferment. We just want something to happen. The pastor took the challenge and won the cross. In 1864, once and for all, proved that there is no such thing as spontaneous generation as originally believed. And he made the dog a kind of flag that had a crooked neck such that it was not blending the air. In other words, when we grow bacteria today, we use cotton clothes, the air still goes in. But it filters it such that the bacteria don't come in too. So he used a filtering mechanism so that the air would come in, but it was filtered. And then he could not say that, well, the oxygen no growth. So, but there was oxygen, so there was no argument between the two scientists. So once and for all, Pasteur proved that there is no such thing as spontaneous generation. But then this obviously started to create another problem. Okay, if life doesn't just spring from here and there and get fish and then meat, where does it come from or where did it originally come from? Well, in the popular belief, well, all is here. Well, that's, sort of evading the issue completely. Then even a better answer is, well, it came from outer space. But again, you're completely avoiding the issue where the life originally comes from. In other words, outer space. Where did it come from then? You're completely evading the issue. O'Karen took the challenge, said that life developed here on the earth in an orderly fashion. And in other words, we can't escape the issue by saying it was always here or that it came in from outer space. The question is why, interesting, if life originated then when the earth was formed, why is it still, or is it, and why it was created, and all the people just popping up from the dust over the corner? Alright, O'Karen said that as the earth was formed, in other words, the origin of the earth, the atmosphere was not as it is today. It has changed because of this evolutionary process. Things have changed progressively. One thing has changed and this has changed something else. In other words, the atmosphere was not oxygen as we have now and carbon dioxide of nitrogen. Instead, it was what we call a reducing atmosphere. Our atmosphere today, in other words, the presence of hydrogen, which we consider the term reducing, oxidizing is what we have today. So we have oxygen, and if you live in the Alley Valley, we've got ozone, more than we care for. But actually, there is ozone in our atmosphere, even here. And it is essential. If there were no ozone in our atmosphere, we would not be here. Ozone blocks out harmful ultraviolet rays from outer space. If we had no ozone, these rays would come in, we wouldn't survive at all. Ozone is absolutely essential. But, you see, it was not present in the beginning, and it was probably necessary for the formation of life. All right, what was the atmosphere? Ammonia, and it was clean with ammonia, you know, the strong odor, water, strong odor of water. The other was substance, marsh fuel. All right, we have everything we need. Nitrogen, hydrogen, oxygen, carbon. All we need for us. These are the elements that make up life. Protein, use nitrogen, sugars, and otherwise use the carbon, hydrogen, and oxygen.
all of this is this. This is a different kind of atmosphere than water, ammonia, and methane. He proposes merely on a theoretical basis that this was a regional atmosphere and that these substances could weed energy now. Where does it come from? Well, outer space. There was no ozone, there was nothing to block the ultraviolet ionizing radiation from outer space. So we have an energy coming in from outer space, putting and controlling interactions between these particular substances, and whether we deal with organic molecules. Well, we find today there is evidence started in 1953, started working in on actually experimenting with appearance ideas, and we find that with first Miller in 1953 using an electric spark produced a variety of organic compounds, a tremendous variety of organic compounds using these three substances plus an electric spark. Subsequently, up into the 1960s, early 1960s, same thing was done using nothing more than heat, and putting them together in a flask for not even boiling temperatures less than this, and for 24 or 40 hours, building up organic compounds in skin, starting with this same thing. All right, what is the evidence that these substances could have been in the atmosphere? We find that there, we find hydrocarbons, in other words, we call them hydrocarbons, C and H together. We find in meteorites. Methane, CH4, marsh gas, is found, it can be present on Jupiter, Neptune, Saturn, Venus, and Mars. And other components we find also on these different planets. What now has been produced? We have produced amino acids. These make up what? The proteins. We produce sugars. These make up carbohydrates, starch, type of thing, cellulose, group of things we call polysaccharides. We build up fatty acids. These to form our fat and glycerin. In other words, we have basically three food components or components of living things. These would be protein, carbohydrates, and fat. These are the three food components. So protein, carbohydrates, and fat. And these are the things that we would have to build up. And basic for amino acids and protein, this makes your carbohydrates, and these two together form your fat. And actually, it has been demonstrated that these can be produced. One of the things we have to do is combating the nucleic acid. This is the most difficult one, apparently. This one has also been formed in the laboratory, starting again, basically, with these two. Well, where does pheromones go from here? In other words, we started building up triple organic compounds. Then gradually these pump together. They tend to have chemical reactions that pump them together. And most of your things are what we call colloids, proteins, large molecules of proteins that colloids typically membrane them. If you ever boil milk or anything, protein, you get this film, separation between two mediums. You get this kind of a film which, in other words, could be likened to the cell membrane, which separates the cell fungus from the outer medium. So, believe then that this membrane develops gradually within the membrane, reactions occur, enzymes probably formed gradually. Perhaps some of these could be successful, and growth may have occurred. Reproduction merely by breaking the chain. In other words, from here, we believe that possibly life could have developed. In other words, if we can, also if we look at it this way, if we could build up the gene based on the simple kind of concept of life, then again, this could conceivably go on to primitive forms of life. Well, when did the atmosphere change? The first forms of life were what we call anaerobic occurs without the presence of oxygen. Why? Because there's no oxygen. And when did oxygen disappear? Probably after the presence of the green chlorophyll. In other words, you know, plants produce oxygen in their process of photosynthesis. So oxygen did not occur until after plants produced. Plants are not the first ones to fire. You see, later, they produce the oxygen, and gradually that changed, that's became what we call aerobic, utilizing the oxygen. Perhaps at first, the oxygen was toxic to the aerobic organism. And one explanation for this is the presence of bioluminescence. This is the fireflies. These are the little fireflies that glow in the dark. This is what we call bioluminescence. Bioluminescence is a process which chemicals have put together that enhance the presence of oxygen, result in the luminescence. We find it present in various groups. We find it in bacteria, fungus, of course, the insects, and certain isolated groups. We find this bioluminescence. Seems to be no connecting reason to. In other words, it's not necessarily an agency. And so, why do these isolated groups still have bioluminescence? What is it from it? And the suggestion was that perhaps, possibly, it was a way of getting rid of oxygen in the early history, and oxygen reacting on it before developing a respiration system that utilized it. So the plants then drop the oxygen, and with that, they clean the atmosphere that we have now. One other thing I'd like to bring out before I close, and this is the idea of, okay, if it happens once, if the origin of the pipe happened once, is it possible that it could happen again? This goes under the term neo, meaning new, biogenesis, the origin itself of life. Okay. If it happened once, is it still happening? And so, well, the objection refers to why is it still happening would be first conditions of change. We no longer have a reducing environment. Our environment now is oxidized. And all the experiments that they performed, they were unable to produce any organic compounds in an oxidized environment. They had to use the same thing here. The present environment, no, these people don't do it. And other objections would be that, well, if it were occurring, it's finally going to detect it. I mean, how that feel in that corner, and you knew it just before the light or light, and you probably don't either. Never thought it's the competition with what's already here. Because we're pretty big, and we would eat up any little small forms. Oh, okay, that makes a little problem. But some people feel that intellect is not necessarily mean that fetal biogenesis is not occurring or has not occurred in the cell. They suggest virus is involved. Virus is very simple thing. It seems to have no direct relationship between all the other plants and animals, so to speak. And suggesting that these viruses appear later when they get all up. Nevertheless, later than the other forms of life, it was something that occurred later, but it had to occur after lysophilization period because of the chemicals, the lysosome, is nothing more than DNA. It's a simple form of existence, DNA, for the protein folio. So could viral or even bacteria have occurred later than this original line?
And also, there's a suggestion that maybe not all licensed facilities can be used to start the day and go off and all that long. Could possibly have been two or three, or maybe, like, the animal could not have come. Having some of them in late, particularly way back in the early, or maybe they developed. So, this is, one idea, as far as the origin of life, which is, he says how life could develop using the natural law that we have, and not, does it seem reasonable to defy these laws? I mean, they're corrupt, and they seem to fall, and couldn't these laws that we have, this beautiful functioning, have occurred, and maybe everything has been organized and developed out of original manner. Are there any questions? Yes.
Margaret, how do you explain the beginning of the electrical energy that's generated in the human body, especially on the basis of chemical reaction and thinking, particularly at the heart muscle and also the brain?
The, I don't really know how to answer this. I think you probably have to know a lot more about physical chemistry and otherwise to explain this. All that I can mention is the experiments that are made with the heart. They have separated the single cells themselves and have found that the heart itself, certain cells in the heart, along with not even being in the hull, will have this inherently beating type of thing. And this may be one of the inherent characteristics of protoplasm. But how to explain it is just other than to say that conceivably this could be a reaction or an inherent
problem. I understand that this is the electric potential maintained by enzyme reaction.
In nerve reactions, you have ions within the body, in other words, the potassium versus chloride ion that gives you this particular potential. In other words, it would be the particular distribution within the cytoplasm, the medium surrounding it, and how you tend to give you this difference in potential, and thus the order nerve impulse. But I think, in all of this, there's still something missing. I mean, that we can't really explain. Okay, we start with, you can build up, these molecules, you can build up them, but somehow, particularly with man, it's evolved into more complex life, and it was something different. I mean, here we have a conscious, we have the being of self is another one. There is, something that we really can't explain, even though we can build up gradually. Where does this consciousness come in? Where is the brain, the mind, and the being? You see, there is just a little something mysterious here involved in that. Here again, we must go to God to explain this thing too, or how this comes in.
Gets us into the field of abortion.
Yeah, when does this develop and when are we?
What seems to be the reason for the RNA having one of the basic differences? The DNA seems to be an extended kind of a pretty fresh from the RNA.
I don't know what they mean by otherwise, perhaps to make it distinctive. I don't know why I want to make it distinctive. I have even remember reading a reasonable explanation. Obviously, a single chain would be better for making it act as a printing press, but even the presence of ribose, you see, instead of deoxyribose, the second year. But probably these two factors help distinguish it from DNA. That's the thing that you find from why.
into the extra hook here. Right, just be another parallel belt under the system.
Side of the heritage, you mean?
Is this a more advanced state, or is it present in...
No, the fine bacteria, certainly not advanced type of it here. It could actually have been the first kind to develop before you had your... You may have had your gene just in this outside area, and then later they became on and on. This is the kind of inheritance we have with the bacteria that transmit the resistance from one strain or one genus to another. It is the cytoplasmic inheritance rather than the nucleus.